and welcome to the official Scottish Rugby Podcast. We're joined today by Scotland head coach Gregor Townsend. Welcome, Gregor. How are you?
Very well. Good to see you guys.
It's myself and Mossy. No Jamie this week, Mossy.
No, it's in his travels, Jamie. Nice travels. It's you and I. We've got Rory away as well, so Michael Dix is hearing the sound. So the last time we were let loose alone, remember, we couldn't figure it out to start or stop the entire podcast.
Yeah, it was a 5-hour podcast. We only put out 20 minutes, but hope we'll be better on that
smoother today, I think.
Gregor, we're going to have a chat to Gregor and a brief look back at the World Cup as well as digging into the 1872 Cup games that are just around the corner, and then a Six Nations tournament just over a month and a half away. So, Gregor, firstly, talk us through your process since the World Cup. I assume you and your coaching team have been extremely busy looking at everything that had gone on as well as planning for the future.
Yes, when you're an international coach, you have time to do reviews, time to plan, probably too much time because we can't wait to get back coaching. This is a longer gap than we've ever had. We obviously had the players for a longer period during the World Cup build-up, but normally you go from summer tour to November tests and Six Nations comes around quite quickly. But middle of October to mid-January feels a long time. It's been a process of digging really deep into the reasons why we didn't achieve what we set out to achieve and reach our potential. Meeting lots of people, having those discussions within the coaching group and the wider management, going out and meeting coaches that have coached at international level before, that are coaching at international level currently and at club level. Been great to sit down with likes of Sidney McGeachan and Jim Telfer and just pick their brains, get their views on things. So it all just goes into a mix of formulating, right, next time we have this group, what are we going to do to be better, and putting things in storage for whoever's there for the next World Cup, the lessons we learned this time around.
Well, you said that you obviously had the players for a long time prior to the World Cup kicking off, and I assume you were happy with the preparations, the four tests, a good balance across the home and away and the physical challenge of Georgia and the attacking threat of France. I assume you were happy. Were you really happy with the preparations leading into the opening game?
Yes. Obviously, if you were to ask me after the World Cup camp as we're flying out to Japan, have you been happy with how it's gone and what you wanted to achieve out of that, I would have said yes, 100%. There was a number of things we wanted to do during that period. One was bring a group closer together so they got to know each other better. And that includes management and players. There was obviously the drive to be as fit as we possibly can be, and the majority of the squad got to their best ever fitness levels, and these are fitness levels they hadn't achieved before. Things like tests that we do, monitoring of training with their GPS units, and also their body fat reduction, and 80-90% of the squad were had never been fitter. And then when you compare that to the same fitness tests that we know other teams, leading teams in World Rugby do, we were better than them. So that's a real credit to the players, first of all, but also the conditioning group, the performance team that helped put that plan together. We wanted as well to make sure that we got the rugby elements that we believed would help us reach our potential during our practices, and that goes hand in hand with the conditioning work. So no, we were generally pleased. Mm-hmm. We had players coming back from injury, likes of Duncan Taylor and John Barkley, who'd missed a chunk of time. That period of getting back to full fitness was important to them. We did lose one player with injury, Sam Skinner, and a couple of guys picking up injuries as we got closer to the World Cup, but in general, we got the players in a really good place as a group and where they were physically. In terms of the games, it's a difficult one to assess. Playing four games was certainly the right number. Mm-hmm. It meant we could
a big squad and a lot of depth to choose from. It's essential, isn't it?
Yeah, and we knew that we were going to have to play every player in the World Cup with the run of our games, especially between Russia and Japan. We were always going to play a different group of players against Russia, so we had to give them opportunities to play. So four games was right. Maybe in hindsight, the two Georgia games back to back with a 6-day turnaround, flying from Georgia back here, that was a busy week with the squad announcement as well.
But that's the type of challenge that you'll face in a World Cup.
Yeah, and so when you look at that, you go, well, maybe it wasn't the perfect opposition or timing into that game, but also it gives the team a different challenge of having to travel like we did between games. I just remember sitting in the coaching box increasingly during the second half as one, another player went down injured that, well, maybe this is a game that wasn't suited to us. In the end, it was only Jamie Ritchie who had a serious injury, but he ended up making our squad anyway. But that evening, five players went to hospital when we were flying out to Japan 2 days later. But they all made it on the flight out on that Monday.
And with hindsight, was there anything in that period that you felt went really away from the rugby park, away from the 80 minutes, that you felt was a real standout success? On the flip side, is there anything that you feel you maybe would have changed other than what you've mentioned?
In terms of the positives, I think moving around the country was something that we wanted to do to make sure that the players were engaged, that it was a different venue. Obviously, we were going to be moving around Japan week to week or after a fortnight in terms of our stay in Kobe, so we're getting them used to that. A couple of public sessions, one in Inverness to kick our campaign off, was excellent. One in Orium, I remember being really physical, and a few thousand people turning up that day, so it felt like a proper session. We trained really hard when we took our break to Portugal. It's something that obviously other teams do. England were there, and Ireland were just coming in after we left. And the benefits of being away on a camp in hot weather, we thought that were very relevant to improving your fitness, but also very relevant to Japan. So, no, I think the camp that was put together by Stuart Yule, Gavin Scott, David Edge, and myself was what we wanted to get out of it. There was a lot of competition for places. That obviously became a challenge in terms of selection as players improved with us and played really well in the games. But that's a situation you want to be in. You don't want to be picking a team because it's only 31 that you feel can represent Scotland. There was many more than that, and many tough decisions on players that didn't make it that we know would have probably had very good World Cups for us.
You mentioned Ireland there. Let's talk about the group stages now. I assume you've clearly had an in-depth analysis of the games as you play them, as well as post. How much of an effect do you believe that Ireland game and the result had on the rest of the tournament for Scotland?
I don't think it had a big effect on the rest of the tournament in terms of how we played, because we played very well in the two games following that. Obviously, it was a blow to not play well. We can't get around it. We played very poorly. It was a surprise given how well we trained and also how we'd progressed through our summer tests. From a poor start against France to playing well at home, and in that first game, I think 29 out of 30 were started. I think Stuart Hogg was the only player to play both games, so it would have been tough to win both games. But to see the improvement from Nice to Murrayfield, to BT Murrayfield, and then to see a very good performance out in Georgia, backed up by a different team the following week, it was very disappointing and a surprise to us all that we didn't carry on with that form or play even better against Ireland. It didn't affect the group. The game that affected the group the most was the Japan game. But even if we'd won against Ireland, we still had to beat Japan because Japan beat Ireland. But yeah, it was disappointing not to have played well.
And what do you think went wrong? I mean, I actually thought, I've said this before, that the first two or three minutes, I know it's only a small snip, I mean 5 minutes, I thought it started exactly how you wanted to start. Moved Ireland around, got them on the edge, got them in the inside a couple of times, some kicks in behind. But it was almost, when that first try was conceded, that's where the problem started. And it's just really I suppose, difficult to watch, difficult to be involved in. And through your conversations with Sadiq McGeachan and Jim Telfer and the other people you've spoken to since then, they'll have experienced that experience as well, I assume, as a coach. So did you find answers at the time? Did you find answers in the review that can help going forward?
Yes, and this podcast will probably last 2 hours if I went through them all.
That's good, though. That's exactly the process you go through, isn't it?
Yeah, and we look at ourselves. We look at what we did as a coaching group in the days leading up to that game, what we did in terms of selection, what was that right, and also the day off the game and the minutes and hours before the game in terms of getting that right mindset. Because you're right, Chris, when we conceded that first try, it seemed like it was a real jolt to us mentally.
It seemed like a shock, didn't it?
Yeah, which shouldn't have been the case. This is a group, it was an experienced group that played, a group that had showed the resilience after the defeat against France, had showed the resilience a number of times the previous season, coming back in games. So to not do that, not to have a big response against Ireland after conceding a very soft try. The try itself came from us kicking, pretty straightforward exit with a chase. We didn't get the chase line totally correct, but we made the tackle. And then the next phase, Ian Henderson just runs through a space which should never have been there in the defence, and they score off it. We back that up with we're losing the ball on a wide ruck. And then we are in the Ireland 22 a few minutes later, and we have a play that we'd actually run earlier in the game and it worked really well for us. So this is a similar play. We drop the ball, they kick the ball down 80 yards, hits a post, get a scrum five, and they score off it. So those moments can happen in a game when things don't come off, when maybe you don't get your defence right, or maybe you don't execute an attack. But it's how you react to it, to that as an individual, as a group, that shows what you're about. And we didn't show that enough in the first half. The second half,
it's a perfect storm with the weather coming in, chasing a game against a team who likes to control possession.
Probably the best team in the world at controlling that possession as well.
Absolutely. It was always going to be tough because we were behind on the scoreboard in that first half. It was much tougher with the weather. And I don't think the second half, we can judge where the players were in terms of the performance. I know they would have gone out and taken the game to Ireland, but it became not much tougher as Ireland just put the ball in behind us, as you do with the scoreboard and weather pressure and opposition. What was pleasing was the reaction from everyone straight after that. How the coach, my assistant coaches, worked that week. How the players put their hands up and said that wasn't good enough, not good enough. Ever wearing a Scotland jersey, and we're part of that as a coaching group, and we knew we had to be better. The pressure was obviously on playing a team that were a very dangerous opponent, Samoa. Over many years and in World Cups have pushed Scotland very very close. The conditions that day in Kobe were horrendous, even though it was very warm. It was worse than playing in a monsoon with the sweat and humidity. And the players put an outstanding performance in attack and defence. So it's just a pity it had to be after such a poor opening to the tournament, but they showed what they were in those next two games.
I suppose that is the answer, Al, isn't it? That mistakes happen in the game. We've played in games when mistakes happen. Opposition getting top. You, I have missed tackles I wish I'd never missed in my life. But they happen. It's how you bounce back and how you get that strength to bounce back within the game. Because Gregor's right that Samoa was 34-0 to Scotland. Russia was 61-0 to Scotland. So we saw that impact. But
there's the end game result.
That's what I'm going to say. From your experience in an end game, how do you get that? How do you, help that?
It's the small moments as well that you get. You don't get many of them. It's the moments in behind the post. It's the time with the coaches at half time and how valuable that can be coming out the other end, as well as Gregor's talked about it there, that came post match, but the honesty within the match as well.
I used to always think the next thing you do has to be done well. It has to be done really simple. So it could be a really, really simple thing. But I suppose that the confidence of doing some of the most simple thing well can give you move on to the next and you take sort of steps back. And we're just up against it, against that.
Well, it's action, isn't it? So, I mean, I talk about small moments where you can maybe set that action up, but it's really, to change momentum, it has to be an action. It has to be a big hit of a good ball carry, and it's trying to simplify the game plan. But moving on from that Ireland game, Gregor, the resilience you talk about, it's probably under a microscope more at a World Cup than any other time with short turnarounds. But you must have been pleased with that bounce back, the honesty that then led you into the two following games. Not just for the 80-minute performance, but for the way the whole environment and the group moved things forward.
Yes, and it was a long wait for that next game.
Yeah.
I think we'd all preferred to play the next day, and even though our 4-day turnaround was challenging between Russia and Japan, we would have taken it after the Ireland game. So the players had to endure us as coaches giving them a hard time. I think we had 6, 7, 8 players every day up at media, so we had the media giving us a hard time, rightly. And we had some tough training session and a tough challenge waiting for us. And some players had the disappointment of not getting a second chance. Mm-hmm. And as a head coach, it's your responsibility to make sure that you select a team you believe will perform. And we had to make some difficult decisions on performance. We could have made more changes, but you also don't want to make too many changes to keep that group together. And you believe in everyone going into a game anyway, so you know that a lot of those players with second chances will repay you, repay the what goes into that jersey, and they did that day.
And Japan topped the pool, but having spoken to you since then, you believe, and I believe, there's opportunities in that second half. And one of the biggest frustrations from the World Cup may be the lack of maybe execution to take those opportunities that presented themselves against Japan that would have changed the result.
Yes, and the Japan game was very different than the Ireland game.
Yeah.
Japan, we obviously had a challenging build-up to that game, one training session because of the short turnaround, and then the day before the game, because of the weather, we weren't allowed out of the hotel. But I was very proud of the way the players started. They'd worked hard outside of that one training session to know what we were going to be doing, emphasising that week or that 3 or 4 days in terms of how we believe we can win against Japan. Mentally, they were very switched on. A few players were backing up after playing three or 4 days earlier. And the way we started the game showed where we were in terms of our mindset and clarity. We defended very well. We got a couple of turnovers. We scored a try early on in the game. But after that, we had a period where Japan had a lot of the ball and we had a lot of defending to do. We didn't do that as well. Japan did play some good rugby in that period, but we look at ourselves and think, or certainly know, that we could have done a better job there. But at 14-7, in terms of possession, maybe that was a scoreline that you could predict, given that Japan had so much ball. The big disappointment was either side of halftime. Two really soft tries, one from a 22 restart. The ball gets moved wide, and a kick behind we don't deal with. And then in the second half, we have a 5-on-2 in attack. We were in our half, but it was a really good opportunity for us to go and score a try. We didn't execute that well, and not only did we not take that 5v2. Ken Fukuoka managed to rip the ball out of our hands and get a runaway try to make it 28-7, which in any game is very difficult to come back from, playing essentially away from home against one of the form teams in the world at the time was going to be very difficult. But the way the players came back was magnificent. Whether it was the players that were on the field that had to go through that disappointment of being 28-7 down, or the players came off the bench, made a difference. We totally changed the momentum of the game. And back to your question on your point, with 22 minutes to go, we were 7 points behind, and we had enough to win that game. Enough in terms of our fitness. We were very strong in the last 20 minutes of every game we played, and in terms of the momentum, and most frustratingly in terms of the chances we created. We believe there was 5 opportunities, good opportunities for us to score tries in that last 20 minutes, and you're not going to take every one. No team executes 100% on creating opportunities, but we had to take 2 or 3 out of that, and if we did, obviously we'd have gone on to win that game.
How much, if at all, do you think the bonus point scenario, I think back to 2011 when we played England, and it was a reasonably similar scenario as far as having to get
9 points clear, wasn't it? Yeah, 1-9.
Exactly that. Do you believe that had an effect? And did you talk about it before, or did you just go out and emphasise the fact that you needed to win the game?
Well, we knew we had to win 4-0 or 5-1. Winning the game was a priority, because you weren't going to go through unless you won 4 or 5 points. As soon as Japan scored that fourth try, then it had to be about
5-1.
Or denying them a losing bonus point. So we still had that opportunity. I think it's obviously more of a mountain to climb than just win a game when you're 28-7 down. But the players we had in that field, their ability, their fitness, and the opportunities we talked about, it was there for us. It would have been an unbelievable comeback, almost like the one we'd had at Twickenham, and you don't want to go into games having to do that, but it was there for us, and that's a disappointment from our perspective, and obviously all the players. That at the end of the game, we didn't achieve what we set out to achieve, and we left before the knockout stages.
Last one before we move on and talk about 1872. How much harder is it as a coach when you don't have that opportunity? So our players will be disappointed about how the World Cup went. They come back, they go back to their clubs, and they get to refocus on something different from you and your coaching team. There'll be an awful lot of the process of looking back at what went on. How much tougher is that? And would you rather get the opportunity to get over it, like you talked about in the Ireland game, as quickly as possible?
It's hard to use the term tough, because we sit in a coaching box and watch rugby videos and put session plans together. The toughness comes from playing, and the physicality of the game now, and the effort you have to put in. It's not as enjoyable having to wait for a few months to get back out there and having to review things. You want to get back straight away and do the job and put things that you've learned into place. I believe it's much more enjoyable for the players to get back there and play, and I know some players were keen to play straight away, even though a rest would have been a good thing for them, either mentally and physically. So the enjoyable thing is what you do. So just now, I'm a coach, our coaches are coaching, we want to get there and coach. The players love playing, so they want to get back playing and change the focus or the narrative of the last time we did something was a defeat. Let's go and change that.
And a big part of that will be, I suppose, the first big part for you is selection. We're going ahead to the Six Nations. 1872 cap just around the corner. Obviously, Edinburgh and Glasgow and the other sides that have Scottish involvement have been playing in their domestic leagues and their European leagues. So, but it is an opportunity, or a unique opportunity, really, to see so many of your potential players playing head-to-head. 1872, you'll be aware of their form anyway, but how much will you be able to take from the next couple of games between the city rivals?
Yeah, well, it's actually a really condensed period now with Europe being played four rounds over 5 weeks. Europe's always what you look at and how your players are playing. They're going to be playing international teams, just as we will be in the Six Nations. It's a step up.
So will you learn more from the European games than you will from the 1872 then?
No, I'd like to think that we'd learn more from 1872, but sometimes in the experience
sometimes emotion takes over. Yeah,
sometimes as 1872 cups become too much of a one-on-one battle. That's the thing. Yeah. How you describe it, you've got people going up against each other with the Six Nations around the corner, people that have been in World Cup squads competing for the same position, people that have missed out in the World Cup squad that are desperate to show they should be in the next Scotland squad. Sometimes you get some cracking games and you get a real skill and execution of what you want to see in an international group.
Sometimes you don't.
Yeah, sometimes you don't. So it's across a period. Like December's great for us.
Yeah.
Normally it comes straight off the back of November, so it's quite close to the November test. Here we've had a build-up into it. Players have been rested. Guys like Stuart McInally and Johnny Gray have had a longer rest. Other players have came back in quicker. But these next few weeks are where we'll sit down much more as coaches and say, right, the form of this player, whether he was in the squad before or not, means that he has to be in the mix for us. We watch all our games every weekend. The amount of rugby we watch is great from our perspective, not maybe so good from our partners and family's perspective, but we know what the players are doing. But this is a month where we'll be sitting much more as coaches and go, right, well, we can't ignore this guy, or this player hasn't been playing as well. And the 1872 Cup over Christmas will be fascinating for us to watch.
I've got the results for last year. Edinburgh came out on top in the first game, 23-7 at home, and then came out on top 16-8 away at Scotland in the 2 weeks over the festive period. Edinburgh's form's probably more consistent at the moment, I'd say, but Glasgow had a brilliant result in La Rochelle. We'll be touching that later. I put you on the spot, but guys, but who do you think would be, well, who do you think would come out on top over the derbies? Is it home wins? Is that the way it usually goes? Obviously not last year, or is it too difficult to predict?
Yeah, it is difficult to predict. I'm looking more on the rugby side of it, and in terms of the styles Edinburgh have mm-hmm. Changed a lot what they do this year. Mm-hmm. So you saw that evidence of that in a great way against Wasps at the weekend. They moved the ball a lot through their forwards, so forwards passing, their attack shape, mm-hmm. brought in forwards in a wide channel, brought a lot of the back three onto the ball. And they did that repeatedly, even if sometimes the defence was on top. And then they also saw their spacing behind with an attacking kicking game. Mm-hmm. Allied to their obviously excellent set piece and their very good kicking game, kick chase game, and a strong defence. To me, that was the best performance I've seen of Edinburgh all season, and for a number of months before that, a very, very good performance.
And these things you mentioned, that gives a level of consistency, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's the building blocks that are done well, that is one of the reasons that they've been so consistent.
Absolutely. Against a team who comes up here with a very good reputation, mm-hmm. with excellent players. And then you look at Glasgow and go, what a magnificent comeback mm-hmm. To beat La Rochelle away from home, a team that's got an excellent home record and a noisy atmosphere. Playing the way Glasgow play. Mm-hmm. They've added more of a kicking game this season. So you'll see a fascinating blend of rugby styles, mm-hmm. Which are maybe more aligned than they were last year in terms of how the game's played with kicking and pressure and attack versus defence.
I think this week's games will have a bearing on them as well. Agree completely with what Gregor's saying there as far as the rugby ability that the Edinburgh showed. Glasgow's result for me was more about character. It was more about the willingness to go to those dark places to get a result that they needed to get. Now, depending on what type of 1872 game we see, because we've talked about it from your point of view, Gregor, you'll be wanting to see the players at their very best. Now, at times you don't see them and the emotion takes over. I think it'll be, they're great games. I look forward to watching them. I always enjoyed them as a player, as you did as well, Mossy.
Yeah, and just on that, that's a really good point, Al. The desperation of the Glasgow players at the end of that game mm. and how they were defending and hitting contact yeah. to win that game, that's the sort of mindset that comes out of 1872 yeah. Cup games. And yeah, you might see it more from the home teams because they've got huge crowds behind them, but you'll see a desperation and a fight. And it might not always be pretty rugby, but that's getting closer to international rugby, that you have to put your body in the line time and time again when you're playing these games.
And it's a type of thing that can turn a season as well.
Yeah, that, absolutely. That
winning 18-6 down at one point, or 10-3, then 18-6 down at crucial moments, some brilliant pieces of skill that allowed them to score the points to get back in the game. But you're right, it was the last 8-10 minutes where you were really up against it. The Glasgow really dug it, and it's brilliant for them, and I'm sure we'll see more of it this weekend. They play La Rochelle at home, Edinburgh away to Wasps for the first fixtures, and then you've got the two 1872 Cup games.
Well, we've talked about it in the past. December is such a massive month for the clubs. The point you make, Chris, is you don't win a league, you don't guarantee yourself qualification, but you certainly can lose it. So we'll see what comes out the other end of December. But looking ahead, Gregor, to this year's Six Nations and selection in particular, two players that won't be available for you to select are John Barclay, who announced his retirement just over a week ago, and Tommy Seymour, who's just gone out this week. I know you've already commented on both players, but they'll be big losses. They've done an enormous amount in that Scotland jersey.
They have, and they can be very proud of their achievements with Scotland. They've been very consistent and that's why they've gained a number of caps. So in Tommy's case, over a short period, John a bit longer. Both of them have shown real passion to play for the country. It means a lot to them. And yeah, they'll be missed. They'll be missed for their experience, their ability. But for them, they're in control of when they want to call an end to their Test careers, and they have had fantastic Test careers.
Yeah, they've been brilliant, outstanding, haven't they? Some of the tries, Tommy scored, some of his skills and the outside channel, and we spoke about Barks last week and his bravery and his commitment. That's great careers from both. Just, I know you have to rush away, but just one, maybe looking ahead to the Six Nations, and in some ways is it ironic or is it funny that the opening game of the Six Nations is against Ireland away in Dublin, which will be a huge task, but is that almost the best game in terms of the emotional response and the as well as the quality that's needed to right some wrongs from the opening game of the World Cup?
Yes, it could be. I'll tell you after. It's certainly a very
tough new coaching staff there as well. Well, Andy Farrell takes over, who's been involved, but does that make preparation more difficult as to what to expect? Will it be a clean slate, or do you just focus on yourself?
Well, I think the first game of a championship, you're expecting a team to do something different anyway. Mm-hmm. They've had a while to prepare. Their coaching staff hasn't changed that much apart mm-hmm. from the head coach. Obviously, Joe Schmidt had great success and a huge influence over the way they played. So Andy Farrell had been defence coach, so maybe the defence won't differ too much. But I do hear now he's in charge of an attack mm-hmm. and Simon Easterby's more in charge of the defence. But we'll wait and see. It's about working out what a team is proposing that is different from what you planned. I don't think Ireland will go away from too much of the strengths that they've shown over the last few years, and what teams like Leinster and Munster are doing so well just now in Ulster. Their teams are playing outstanding rugby. Mm. Leinster's second team, I reckon, are in the top five in Europe. Mm. They are so good just now. So we know it's a huge challenge, but it's a first game. For us, first game for them, we will have motivation because we didn't perform anywhere near our best against Ireland the last time we played. So that's got to drive us in making sure our mindset is right. And the rugby side of it, we've got to get to our most accurate to win away from home and against such a good team as Ireland.
Well, Gregor, thank you very much for your time. Best of luck with the Six Nations. Enjoy Christmas in the interim. It's always brilliant to have you on to get that insight, the honesty, the passion that not just you and your coaching team, but clearly everybody brings to that Scotland jersey. So once again, thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. So that was insightful. Obviously, Gregor, as you say, Al, it's always good to hear him talk, to get the depth of understanding, and you can see how much it means to him. Haven't really had a lot of review since the World Cup, but it was some really in-depth chat there and frustrations. And I think what I got from it is that the frustrations are going to fuel the Six Nations in terms of the emotion, but also the detail, the missed opportunities against Japan, and the kind of resilience, the extra resilience that's going to be needed when things go up against you that maybe was born from Ireland.
Yeah, I think also the one interesting part that came out for me is, you know, he said he wouldn't use the word tough, but either from a player's point of view, he gets to bounce back quicker, goes back to the club. Stuart Hogg down in Exeter, I think, asked to play just about the next again week. He wanted to get on and play some rugby. Or even from a coaching point of view, from a professional team, you get the opportunity to bounce back quicker. These guys don't, but they're still working incredibly hard in behind the scenes. You and I know Gregor very well. He's going to be learning, he's going to be analysing, he's going to be looking at himself first and foremost and looking to make it move forward as quickly as possible. But unfortunately, for them, they don't get a chance to do that until the Six Nations come around.
Yeah, sometimes the more time you have to think, the more you think about as well. And yeah. As a player, instinct used to take over, and it was exactly that. You know, you'd make a mistake in the field, and then before you know it, a fraction of a second later, you have to make a decision, you have to commit to something, and that mistake almost goes out of your mind. But if you are hanging over a frustration or a disappointment, you're right, that extra time. But it sounds as if looking forward, looking ahead, and they're looking to find the kind of detail as to why it wasn't as successful as they liked it to be. But I've no doubt that the players are playing well, and Greg and his coaching staff will be preparing for Six Nations. I think the squad will be announced mid-January time. I think the training squad for the Six Nations will be announced mid-January time.
We often talk about the success of Scotland, or the how strong a squad they can put together. A lot of that's determined by how well the pro teams are playing. You're a believer in that, you buy into that. If you've got two pro teams in Scotland playing well, will you get stronger Scotland squad?
Absolutely, but not exclusively. I think yes, but I also think that the flip side's true as well. And sometimes when you're not playing well, your team's not performing, using an individual come out, you need something to come out that environment. So you might not be playing particularly well yourself, or the team might be struggling, but you come out that environment and you say, right, I've got the next 6 weeks of national involvement, and it really spikes you up a bit more. But I do think more often than not, if your squad's going well, it gives you the baseline to start from, but it doesn't mean you'll be successful when you step up to an international arena. You just have to come in with a baseline that you just need to add to. So it'll be an interesting Six Nations, as it always is. Momentum's so key, getting off to a good start so crucial. Winning away from home, whoever you are in Six Nations, is very, very difficult, and the statistics back that up. But there's a lot of rugby between now and then.
Any bolters for you? Anybody that's going to be making that squad selection not looked at in the past?
There may be some, but I think there's so many players have been looked at in the past. Yeah. I think we've got a good crop of players. Right back to summer tours over the last two or three years. I'd be surprised if there was anybody out there certainly I'd be massively surprised if Gregor and the coaching staff didn't know about players out there, and there's a lot of them who other supporters and other people won't have heard about, that they'll have had checks and tabs on for a long time, understanding the game and the developments and giving them work-ons.
But as a year you see more of them, with the World Cup there's an opportunity for guys who maybe haven't been regulars
I think there's definitely people who have been involved who haven't been regulars who'll get more involvement, but I'm not sure if there's any bolts from the blue that haven't been exposed to the either the training squad or the wider training squad of late. Be interesting. What one of them touched on there was Tommy Seymour, obviously announced his retirement, and so he won't be included. But his he's had a brilliant journey, really, and he'll continue to play for Glasgow, I assume. But his involvement from Glasgow, from coming in from Ulster, then becoming a front line international player, a British Lion try scorer, it's some journey. It's had a cracking career.
He's been fantastic. Played a lot with Tommy. Mostly in a Glasgow shirt and a few times in a Scotland shirt as well, and he's used a lot, but a very, very good professional. He was always trying to find ways of making himself better. His work under a high ball was incredible, and probably kind of the basis of his performance. I think that even more so in the last wee while, with his shift at times to fullback, shows how much of a quality rugby player he is as well. So I think John and Tommy, from a leadership point of view, will be big misses, or big influences in the squad. Tommy's, in fact, both of them are renowned for being grumpy. So the squad might be a wee bit more cheerful at times, but they're certainly two guys who weren't scared about saying things if they needed said. They wouldn't shy away from confrontation, and you need senior guys like that. So it'll be a chance again for somebody else to step up and fill that gap.
Well, thank you for listening to the official Scottish Rugby podcast this week. We've obviously had Gregor Townsend on. Al and I have held four on our own. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back with another offering soon.